Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
Well, welcome everyone. Jeez, you know, we've got this great audience today. Wow. They are pumped. And I don't blame them because we have a great guest on our show today, and I'm going to introduce our guest today. So Jeff Toyster is an author, and he helps customer service teams unlock their hidden potential. He's a best-selling author who has written 3 customer service books, including Getting Service Right, Overcoming the Hidden Obstacles to Outstanding Customer Service. He's also been recognized as a top customer service thought leader by Global Gurus, ICMI, and Common 100, and thousands of customer service professionals from around the world subscribe to Jeff's Customer Service Tip of the Week email. He's also a certified trainer with more than 140,000 people in 6 continents, just a few, having taken his video-based training course on LinkedIn, which was at one point in time lynda.com, which many of you are probably familiar with. So welcome to the show, Jeff.
Well, Nancy, thanks so much for having me, and I really appreciate the wild enthusiasm of your audience today. So that's
isn't
a treat.
That great?
It is.
They are psyched. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there have probably had the chance to actually see you speak at one of these conferences, but I get the pleasure of, you know, having this great intimate conversation with you. And I know when we kind of talked about this call and what the topic of conversation would be, which I thought would be very interesting, is you mentioned something about how to use customer and agent feedback to build best practices, because that's an area where when I work with clients, you know, I have this simulator that helps agents really understand how to run through various transactions. And a lot of times when we build out those simulations, they seem sometimes like there's something missing, you know, and I don't think everyone's always building best practices around the proper way to handle a transaction. So I love this topic, and I think through your experience, you know, you've got some maybe tips and techniques that I think our listeners would learn from to really help them build best practices that truly are best practices versus somebody's kind of gut instinct of, I think this is the right way to do something. So I'll let you kind of, you know, introduce the topic as far as what your experiences has been in helping customers build the best practices through feedback.
Sure. I think you really touched on the biggest challenge, which is gut instinct. And, mm-hmm. and the challenge that I've seen leaders confront over and over again is there's a problem, and hey, I'm a leader, so I'm going to make a decision.
Right, right.
And it's not always the best decision. Why? Because the leadership team, I've experienced this all the time, they'll lock themselves in their office or as a team in a conference room, and they'll brainstorm, well, how do we want that transaction or the interaction to go? What's the best process? How do we solve the problem? But guess who they never talk to? Mm-hmm. They never talk to their agents.
Yep.
That's it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there's
you're
probably
right.
someone who's doing it really, really well already, and they just need to find that person or those people and figure out what they're doing. And now you have something that's validated, and you're probably right. going to get better buy-in when you share it with the rest of your team.
And do you find sometimes there's a perception that whatever they're doing is intangible and can't be measured?
In terms of
of the people that are doing it well.
Is
there something that just a nuance to the way they maybe the ease of comfort they have with interacting with a person? You know, so I think sometimes people perceive that as an intangible skill that can't be repeated and transferred.
Sometimes that certainly happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've used this term soft skills in the training world mm-hmm. for years, and most of us are using it incorrectly. so the term soft skills, it has now come to mean personal skills like customer
mm-hmm.
service skills, or
mm-hmm.
you know, such as empathy or listening, etc. But that's not really the origin of the term. The origin of the term soft skills was used to coin skills that are difficult to define and observe.
Mm-hmm.
And so trainers learn to take an easy way out, a bit of a careless shortcut, if you will. And they say, well, I'm training soft skills. I can't really measure or define them, but I'm going to try to train them anyways. And the truth is, that's not training. So if I'm I can't measure, define it, observe it, I'm not actually training you. So to your point, if we're in the contact center and we're saying, I'm giving my agent soft skills training, you probably haven't done your homework to articulate, well, what is this?
Right.
What does this mean? What does it look like when they're doing it right? How will I know? How can I validate it? How can I communicate that to other people so they do it the same way? I mean, that's a lot of work sometimes.
Yes.
And so soft skills is this unfortunate shortcut.
You're right. Right. And it tends to be looked at as subjectively versus objectively.
It does. And here's the beauty, though, is if you can take that subjective thing, such as friendliness, you know, what does it mean to be friendly? Well, if you can articulate it, demonstrate it, observe it, now you can be much more dialed in when you set the expectation of friendliness on the phone with your agents. And that friendliness might mean different things in different places. And it is really tough to define. But once you define it, it becomes much easier to train and much easier to expect agents to deliver that.
Yeah, I just spoke with a CEO yesterday from a company. I used to actually use their software that measures emotion. And it's quite fascinating science. You know, so when I was using it at the time, I said, you know, now I can put a tangible measurement on what people have perceived as being intangible, such as they sound like they don't have enough energy in their voice, or they sound too excited, or, and so they're, by doing a biometric measurement of the voice, they can actually break it down by, okay, you know, within this time frame, within this 11-second clip, you went from this level of emotion to this level of emotion. But where I got stuck with that, and even clients were like, yeah, this is great. Now that I know I sound like this, what do I do about it if I'm not, if it's not what you want? So I'm like, ooh, I didn't think about that part. So I don't know how you get around if they are starting to head down the path of identifying the soft skills correctly. Are there techniques that you've seen or used that help kind of get people on board with the best practice way to express those behaviors?
There certainly are. You know, it really starts, again, with clearly defining, you know, what is the expectation? What does it look like? So we'll use positive emotion or friendliness as the example. I have to be able to define that if I want to train that. And it is kind of difficult, I think, to nail down a concept like that. So, you know, what does friendliness sound like? It probably sounds like certain word choices over others. It sounds like maybe a slightly higher inflection in your tone of voice. A little bit of modulation, a sense of warmth versus a monotone approach. So those are descriptors that will help us get closer. But the second part of that becomes the demonstration, both in training and on the job. So in training, I want someone to be able to demonstrate friendliness. So I could say to that agent, that's exactly what I'm looking at. And what a lot of contact centers are doing now is in training or even after training, they're keeping not only random calls or calls where the agent did poorly, they're keeping calls where the agent did really well. And they're able to give the agent a personal benchmark. Here on this call, you sounded friendly. This is a great example of friendliness. So you can go back to that benchmark and, you know, compare it to a future call where maybe they're having a bad day or, you know, that it's a difficult customer, whatever the case may be. And And we'd say, well, here's your benchmark and here's how this call, tell me how friendly you came across on this call. And mm-hmm. and the agent could probably say, you know, I didn't sound that great. And you know, I'll tell you why. Or, mm-hmm. boy, I guess I have some opportunities to improve. So it really is a consistent process of calibration. Now, years and years ago, when I worked in contact centers, we didn't have the luxury of, I think, as much technology as mm-hmm. we have available today. You know, we'd still record calls, those little micro cassette recorders, and you had
you
had to literally kind of punch in an agent's extension and hope they were on the phone right then.
Yes.
No way.
Yes.
So it was a lot more difficult. But even then, we did some rudimentary calibration. You know, in training, mm-hmm. you had to demonstrate the right level of friendliness and customer service, even to pass the class. And then once you did, the quality assurance team, in conjunction with the supervisor, there would often be meetings where we would listen to calls. And as part of the training team, I was part of this. And we would have discussions around, well, you know, what does friendliness sound like? Is that friendliness? Or how about, you know, what are the characteristics that would cause us to make the judgment this call was unfriendly?
Yeah.
And we have to consistently calibrate. Now, I think the one thing I've learned since then, and this is kind of getting back to the original theme today, is I know, you know, many years ago, we didn't do a good enough job of including the agents in that process. And I think the thinking's mm-hmm. evolved now to say, you really need to have agents represented in that calibration process, because they'll tell you not only this is sure, I agree, this is friendly, but what's reasonable or what's not reasonable, or
sure,
why it's difficult to do things in a certain way when you're talking to a customer.
And do you see where is it the frustration on the agents? Is it the conversation element of the transaction, or is it the accessibility of the resources they need in order to respond to the customer properly?
More often than not, it's not feeling fully empowered. And if you think about this, and I think you and I know this, and I'm sure many of your listeners realize this, the average customer probably does not, which is when you
right.
contact a contact center, the agent is often not the person who is physically solving the problem.
Right.
It, they're usually leaving some sort of note for somebody else to do it. You know, and I come from the catalog industry, for example, and I wasn't also going out to the warehouse to ship the correct item after we shipped the wrong item, right? Somebody else is physically doing that. And that's the challenge I think a lot of agents face, is they don't always have the tools and resources available to make the customer happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly what most agents want to do. They want to make the customer happy. And it compounds the problem because the customer's upset. I don't have the tools to help the customer feel better. And
right.
now it wears on me. It becomes harder and harder for me to say things the right way or express the appropriate level of empathy. So I think generally it's not having the right tools.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I just had an experience with my cable/phone provider 2 weeks ago where everything was down. I mean, it's like I'm running a business here. I can't have my phone and internet down simultaneously. So, you know, I'm on my cell phone. I'm like, and it even says, we know there's a service outage in your area. I'm like, you don't plan for these service outages during the day. But the agent, and it was through chat. It wasn't, I was on chat.
Okay.
And I just said, you know, this is crazy. I'm running a business here. I'm losing money because I can't be on the phone or internet. So they actually said, well, I'm authorized to reduce your next bill by $40, which at the time I was still furious that I didn't really care what they were doing. But
sure.
they at least thought, okay, I have been given leeway to at least throw this out there as some concession of knowing that, you know, we've damaged your business in some way financially. So I think, you know, there may be ways that maybe organizations could say, okay, if and in these situations, we'll give you up to X number of dollars with discretion, X number of, you know, free trials or, you know, throwing in some cross-selling opportunity and reducing the price. So, do you see some of that coming into play that helps provide that empowerment?
I think you bring up a wonderful example where I see most contact centers continue to fall flat. So let's use that your telecom provider as the example. Mm-hmm. I would bet a lot of money that it was not that chat agent's fault that your service went down.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know that.
Right. So, but think about being that agent where customer after customer contacts them and says, I'm sure you were very polite, you were kind, but still the emotion behind it. I'm running a business. This
right.
is difficult. I'm frustrated.
Yes,
and
all caps.
We're all human. In all caps. And
yes.
We're all human, though. It feels personal.
Mm-hmm.
It feels
sure.
like I'm being blamed for it, even though it's not my fault. And now what tools do I have at my disposal to handle that? So
mm-hmm.
it's great that we give them the opportunity to give you a discount or a credit. But here's mm-hmm. where I think contact centers are often missing. A very simple exercise, you can gather your agents together on a team and just simply say, what are the most difficult
mm-hmm.
or common complaints you have to deal
right.
with? And I'm sure, you know, in the case of the cable company or the phone company, it's services down is probably way up on the list.
Right.
And then as a team, you can list those out and one of the things you can do as a leader is say, well, what can we do about it? We know,
mm-hmm.
for example, we're not responsible for that outage, but are there other things that we can do to make the customer feel better or even prevent future, what I would call future flare-ups, which is,
right.
you know,
right.
you feel like it's resolved, but now you have another issue the next week. And often there's a lot of great information that's right within the team. I worked
mm-hmm.
with a customer service team where they had tiered levels of support. So tier one was the more basic stuff like a billing question. Tier two was more technical, et cetera. And one of the things they did as a team was they looked at the top reasons why they would have to escalate a call from tier one to tier two. And of that list, they found that maybe half of them were preventable if tier one just had a little bit more information.
Yeah.
And so
sure.
they were able to resolve it, so think about how that impacted the customer. No one likes to get transferred, so the customer's happy.
Right.
Tier one wants to solve the issue. They don't want to anger the customer, so they're happier because they transfer fewer calls. And tier two is
yep.
happier because they get fewer calls, which means they can spend the time they need with the issues that are really, really challenging. And all of it came from the individual agents working together
mm-hmm.
to identify
mm-hmm.
what the problem was and putting their heads together to find the solution. It wasn't the supervisor who came in and said, here's what we're going to do from now on because I had an idea
yeah.
in my office.
Oh, that's a great example. Have you ever seen teams where they identify what the best practice is, but for whatever reason the leadership doesn't allow it to be implemented?
Well, that's a good question. I think what I see happen is the leadership doesn't even bother to find out. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know yep. if I've seen situations where there's been an implementable solution. Now, sometimes the solution, it seems like a good idea to the agent, but for whatever reason, it's not practical to implement it. I did, in one of my last books, the Service Culture Handbook, talked to a service leader at a company called Cars.com, and one of the things they
oh, yeah.
did
in Chicago
that was really fascinating was there's an open continuous dialogue about improving processes and improving the way they did things. But if someone made a suggestion, there were two questions that they had to answer when they made their suggestion. Number one was, how does it benefit our customers? And
mm-hmm.
and two, how will it benefit us? And I thought that was a great way of looking at it because they were really looking for the balance behind every suggestion. You know, sometimes you could say, well, tell you what, if your service is out, why don't we just give you a you know, free service for the rest of the year? Well, that will certainly
right.
benefit you. You'll be very happy. That
sure.
won't help the company too much, right?
No. Right, right.
On the other hand, you know, maybe there's things that they can do that won't help you. You know, like, hey, you know what? A customer says that they're upset about their service. Say, well, how does this sound? And then hang up on them. Well, that will make your job a lot easier. You don't have to listen to them anymore, but it won't benefit the customer, right? So there's,
right.
We have to consider both sides of the coin when looking at policies. The one thing I do hear customer service leaders say is, you know, I'm worried that if I go ask my employees, you know, they'll have all these crazy ideas, or they'll want too much, or mm-hmm. or they won't even mm-hmm. talk to me. I need to create an anonymous survey. And I've never had an issue getting honest feedback and having a good conversation with employees, as long as they understood that I was asking with sincerity.
Yeah.
I've never experienced an issue with having them being.
Yeah, awesome. And they're in the trenches every day. I mean, their jobs are on the line. They have those KPIs that their, you know, feet are being held to the fire to, you know, minute by minute every single day they're accountable for. And so certainly I'm sure they're going to speak up if there's something that they feel, you know, maybe it's it takes a minute and a half or something to load on their screen for them to, you know, look up customer information. And so they feel if there's some way to have the systems load faster, wouldn't that be great? I could take care of the customer better and my phone time would be reduced. You know, so those
Absolutely.
Are things that I think from an infrastructure they have firsthand knowledge of. And my experience with call centers is there's so many legacy systems and other browser systems and other PDFs that they got, you know, they're just constantly bouncing from one screen to the next, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's the best way to retrieve the information they need in order to assist that customer. I think a lot of times it's just streamlining the systems, which obviously take longer to solve, but at the big picture, you know, would certainly be a big benefit.
It would, and I think there's an opportunity or another opportunity for contact center leaders. Because you raise a great issue or a great example. Let's say a software is taking too long to load.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I try to go to my CFO or my vice president of ops and say, I want to invest in new software because the current software takes too long to load, what that sounds like is, I'd like to spend more money, please.
Yeah.
And the request will probably be rejected.
Yep.
If you know, for your listeners that are mystified by corporate finance, usually the answer you get is, well, the budget for that software is
mm-hmm.
a completely different budget than your operating budget, and we already invested in this solution, so we're
mm-hmm.
good for now. Now, on the other hand, though, if you were to, as a leader, say, okay, I know approximately how long this software takes to load. Let's for round numbers, it takes a minute. And a more modern version would take 30 seconds. So on average, I can save 30 seconds per call. I know
mm-hmm.
how much that cost me. And I know on a per call basis. And then I know how many calls I get where this is applicable. Now I have a dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go to my CFO and say, you know, we're losing, you know, $50,000 a month because of this antiquated software.
Right.
And here's a solution that's going to cost us $10,000 to
mm-hmm.
to implement. I think we should do it. Well, that's a much clearer case. And contact center leaders really can help themselves by becoming better at making the business financial case for those types of upgrades. But it starts with the agent
Absolutely.
Saying, hey, this takes too long, and it's a pain in the neck, and my customers are angry.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And now we haven't really addressed the customer feedback side of the equation. So what examples do you have of – I mean, there's obviously call centers are actually really good at collecting customer feedback quite a bit, but what they do with it is, you know, is the other side of the story. So I don't know if you have any examples that you could share collecting the customer feedback for best practices.
I do, and you're right. Contact centers – collect a lot of feedback, and unfortunately, they don't do much with it.
Mm-hmm.
So the best feedback that you get is every single contact contains feedback, but a lot of it's unstructured. You know, are you really going to go through every single phone call or every single chat
mm-hmm.
or email? There's software now that's making that easier, but it's still daunting.
Sure.
So the starting point, this brings our agents back together to say, what are the top issues that you're hearing? So that's a mm-hmm. shortcut
yeah.
to categorizing all that daily feedback, and now we can figure out how we can act on it. The surveys is another great example, and the dirty secret behind surveys is that even if you're doing a survey, I saw this just yesterday, the contact center leader, a robust survey program, all this data, but the data was not organized in such a way that you could actually do anything with it. It just said, here's our customer satisfaction. Here's how many people said agreed that, you know, it was a good experience, or they liked our products, or you know, we were nice to them. But if we don't know what's driving, you know, repeat business, for example,
right.
or even
right.
customer satisfaction, we can't do anything with that. So as an example, I worked with a client where we went with a very simple survey system. It was literally three questions, and they got so much out of it because they used it the right way. The questions were, number mm-hmm. one, you know, give us a rating. So this was a customer satisfaction rating.
Okay.
Number two was, why did you give us that rating? And so that's free text. So now where this helps you is if someone gives you a top score, says you're amazing, what do they say about you? Because you know, if you look at all of the people who are amazed, you're going to be able to find those drivers. Mm-hmm. Was it friendliness
right.
or fast service or whatever it was? And then when you look at the people who are really unhappy, what are they saying? And chances are there's some really clear and consistent themes. So
yep.
number one is rating. Number two is, why did you give us that rating? Number three, may we follow up with you? And that was huge, because what they did was anybody who gave a low rating, they automatically had a team lead do a follow-up. And that follow-up did two things that were very important. One, it gave them a chance to save that customer's business and maybe fix whatever particular issue that customer was experiencing. And we know, as an aside, that customers, when you follow up and fix their issue after they've been frustrated, they often become even happier
yes.
than if they
yes.
had no issue
yep.
in the first place, which is,
yep.
I'm not advocating we screw up on purpose just to do that. It's a nice bonus.
Yeah.
Right. The second benefit was, if you make enough of those phone calls, you start hearing very specific mm-hmm. feedback about what went wrong and why. And you can compile that data to say, here are the top issues that are driving dissatisfaction. And now we go back to the team. We figure out how to fix it.
Yeah.
So my client was able to dramatically improve not only customer satisfaction, but get a clear handle on what was driving good results and bad results, and drill that all the way down to agent-level feedback and use that to continuously improve performance.
Yeah, that's an excellent example, and I think you're taking it, continuing it through to the agent and comparing those two, because that's one thing that happened to me with one of my clients that was using a contracted call center that in Asia, where they had very heavy accents, and I said, look, you know, my simulator is using software that really understands English, so if you're speaking English really well, you're going to score really well in the simulator. And when they came back, said, gee, you know, the simulator is having a hard time, you know, these people are struggling getting through, you know, it must be the simulation. I said, no, I don't think it is. So I said, well, you know, so they put them into production, and guess what? Customers' scores came back saying, we can't really understand your agents. So the software told them they couldn't understand it. I warned them about the fact that the software was giving us this information. They put them back, still decided to put them in the field, and luckily they were collecting that customer feedback and made them chat agents instead of voice agents.
Wow.
But yes, that customer feedback is super valuable. So as we're winding things up here, Jeff, you know, because you know you're out on the road, you're doing lots of things, but it sounds like you know you do consulting as well. So, what's the best way for someone to reach out to you for either keynote speaking, to get your book, to subscribe to your newsletter, or to maybe bring you in for consulting engagement?
The easiest way to find me is probably my website, which is toistersolutions.com, T-O-I-S-T-E-R, solutions.com. All my contact information is on there. You can subscribe to my customer service tip of the week email, find out all about my books And, you know, you mentioned consulting, which I do offer sometimes, but something I'll share with you and your listeners,
mm-hmm.
I'm always willing to have a conversation. So I even publish my email and my phone number right in all of my books because I want to hear from customer service leaders. And I'm not trying to sell them anything. I just want to hear from the challenges they're facing.
Sure.
If I can point them in the right direction, I'm always happy to do that.
That's awesome. Well, that is unusual and appreciated. So, and on that note, I think our audience would also like to show their appreciation as well. This has been a great session, and I know our listeners have gotten a lot out of it because I have as well.
Well, thank you, Nancy. I really appreciate you having me, and thanks again to your audience for their sincere enthusiasm. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's sincere. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.